Yes, welcome back to Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. It's the middle of the week, but we're all feeling very sprightly here at WFD HQ. It's about time Raf and I stopped rambling on and we got our first guest of the day on the show. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by Goal.com's Mr. Italia, Chris Vokes, joining us on the line. Chris, how are you doing today, mate?
Great, Ali. How are you doing?
I'm very well indeed. A side that is probably about as happy as we are is Juventus right now with everything that went on last weekend in Serie A. Results just seemed to fall their way last weekend.
Yeah, it's been a funny old few weeks since Serie A resumed after Christmas because, you know, Juve had this 8-point lead, which fast became three, and everyone thought that, a large majority of people thought maybe there is a title race in this after all, especially with Napoli gaining the 2 points back as well that they'd lost before Christmas because of the Calcio Scamese scandal. And then all of a sudden this weekend it all fell back into place for Juve. So it's normally a place for swings and roundabouts at the top end of Serie A, but not quite so kind of defined as it's been of the last 3 weeks. It's swung back in the Bianconeri's favour.
What's changed in this Juventus side from those first two games since we came back from the winter break? Because it looked like a completely rejuvenated side against Udinese.
Well, I don't think Udinese helped themselves in that they didn't really press. They kind of sat quite deep and they gave space to like a Paul Pogba. And you know, in a team that, when you looked at that Juve side, there were so many things missing from it. There was obviously Chiellini was out, Pirlo was out, Marchisio was out, Asamoah was out, Vucinic wasn't around. And you just got the idea that, you know, there was something that Udinese could pick at there. But if you're going to give huge amounts of space to Paul Pogba, you know, with each game that he plays for Juve, his reputation just grows and grows. And obviously, he's got two fantastic goals, but I also thought that he directed the traffic very well, like sent the play around the field expertly. And, you know, as much as Andrea Pirlo is often really, really missed, he wasn't on Saturday. And that was partly due to the fact that Udinese gave him so much space, but partly because somebody like Pogba can really make you pay for that.
Have you been surprised about how quickly Pogba has settled at Juventus and how well he's done? Because he didn't get much game time in his first five or six games at first, but recently been a very integral part of this Juventus side.
I'm not particularly surprised. I think that he was massively underused at Manchester United. I think that was the main point because I saw him a couple of times for Manchester United's under-18 side when they came over to Italy for a tournament a couple of years ago at the Easter, and then he also I saw him once for France under-19s against Italy, and on all three occasions that I saw him he just completely dictated games and he looked more than ready for first team football then, and especially for a Man United side who, you know, their midfield is not what it was kind of 5-10 years ago. He should really have been playing in that side, so it was no great surprise to me that when he was given the opportunity by Antonio Conte, he's come in and done really, really well for the most part. And he's had a couple of, really, really standout performances. And the Udinese one was just the latest one.
Have you seen, Chris, we talked so much about the impact of Antonio Conte not being on the bench and in the dugout during games at the early part of the season. Have you noticed a change at all in Juventus? We've had a nice period of time now with him back in the dugout. Is it any different at all?
Not massively, I wouldn't say. I think there was a big difference between the reign of Massimo Carrera and that of Angelo Alessio. I think that Carrera got the large majority, if not all, of his in-game changes pretty much spot on. I had question marks over a few that Alessio came up with, particularly in the game against Milan, which they lost 1-0 at San Siro. But Conte has almost kind of taken it back to the way that he was under Carrera and, of course, under Conte last season. And yes, you know, they've dropped points, for instance, against Sampdoria, but that was more in their initial team selection almost, because there wasn't really anything about the substitutions that made any great amount of difference. And obviously, all season, Conte has been choosing the first 11 and the substitutes in any case because he was working with them during the week. So he, in terms of in-game changes, which was the big thing that we thought they'd miss out on in terms of Conte not being around, I don't think there's been an awful lot of difference, certainly between Carrera and Conte, maybe a little bit Alessio during his spell on the bench. But I think Conte's just taking it back to how it was at the start of the season, if anything.
And if it works, then keep doing it. And Conte obviously had it working last season, and it's been working all season for the majority of the time for Juventus. Every side in Serie A is chasing them once again. Napoli in second place, 5 points off them. They had a draw away at Fiorentina. Despite drawing, this is still a positive result for Napoli, because Fiorentina is a difficult place to go at the moment.
Yeah, Fiorentina are a great side. They're able to play good football, and Napoli will think in a way that it's 2 points drop, just given the way that they conceded a ridiculous goal to Morgan De Sanctis. It's almost a kind of good reminder that they're not quite there yet, in a way, because De Sanctis has forever been a bit of a hothead, kind of, in terms of his positioning and his decision making at times. But there was a kind of memorable own goal that he scored last season when Eric Lamela for Roma cut a ball back on the byline, and somehow De Sanctis managed to palm that into his net, even though it was a few yards away from goal. So, you know, he is prone to these lapses, and it's just a reminder that, yes, they've got Cavani, and he's an absolutely fantastic, fantastic player, and he scored his 100th goal in Serie A at the weekend. And they've got the likes of Insigne, they've got somebody like Inlu who can inject something in the field, they've got Hamzik, but they've also got a pretty suspect back line, and they've got Morgan De Sanctis behind that back line. So, as I say, it's a bit of a reminder that they're not really right there yet. They're not ready to challenge. And as much as I've never been convinced, still I'm not convinced by Juventus' backline, they managed to cover it up pretty well, whereas Napoli tend not to at times.
If you were in charge of Napoli right now, then, Chris, who would you go out to pick up in this January transfer window to bolster that backline? Who's a realistic target for them?
That's a difficulty in a way. You know, Napoli has so long been kind of based on just a stubborn, resolute back three. They had the likes of Gianluca Grava and Hugo Campagnaro, who's still there, obviously. Paolo Cannavaro, who's now available again after his ban. They had Salvatore Aronica for a bit there. They've always kind of had just sturdy, resolute defence, and that's kind of what they've based themselves on. They were quite heavily criticised by Bayern Munich last year when they played them in the Champions League. For their rough house tactics, but that, you know, that was the way that they set up. That's, you know, they go about trying to make life difficult for opposition strikers and then get creative in the opposite half. So it almost needs a change of philosophy to bring in more cultured defenders, in a way, players that are going to be more able to kind of deal with more than just the kind of rough style of striker. Because so often when they come up against tricky forwards, for instance, on Sunday, they struggled a little bit with Luca Toni with his movement. And if Jovetic had been on his game, he really wasn't up to the mark, really, compared to what he's normally like, Jovetic. If he'd been on his game, and if a couple more things had fallen Toni's way when he made great runs, then they could have been taken apart at times by Fiorentina. So they really need to look out for somebody who can be cultured but still not completely change what they've had, because, like I say, they're a pretty stubborn back line, but sometimes they just get found out in terms of technique and technical ability.
Chris, two of the other sides chasing Juventus, Lazio and Inter. Lazio had a very surprising draw on Saturday against away at Palermo, second place from bottom side in Serie A. Where did it all go wrong for Lazio, relying on a Hernandez penalty late on to get them out of jail and get them a point out of this?
I think Lazio got pretty lucky in the end, to be quite honest. I'm a bit of a sympathiser towards Palermo, so maybe, you know, I'm a little bit biased. But at the end of the day, Palermo had gotten themselves into a great position, and Lazio just couldn't live with Paolo Dybala when he really got going in the second half. And there was that 2 or 3 minute spell where Palermo scored twice, and it looked like, you know, they weren't exactly comfortable, but they weren't under the cosh like they could have been. And then it was only a ridiculous piece of decision making by Pedro Munoz to dive in and commit the foul that really got Lazio out of jail. I thought that Palermo looked fairly safe at that point. And like I say, one bad piece of decision-making and it cost Palermo two massive points down there, because they're really struggling. They've only won 3 games all season and they do look pretty doomed. 3 points against Lazio could have made a big difference to their outlook. But, you know, like I say, Lazio, for a stage there, just couldn't live with Palermo, particularly Dybala. And it's interesting that Gianpiero Gasperini has said for most of the season that, you know, you just can't play Dybala and Miccoli together. And when they were on the pitch together on Saturday, they caused Lazio a lot of problems. So, you know, again, Lazio, in a similar way to Napoli, if they've got a questionable area of the pitch, it is in the back line. At times, the goalkeeper, although I think Matthias has improved a little bit, I still don't think he's the greatest goalkeeper around, and maybe that's where they need to look to either strengthen or to try to do something a little bit different with the back line. And I think that's where they really showed deficiencies at the weekend. But again, I actually think in the end it was probably a point gained for Lazio.
Why can't Dybala and Mikkeli play together on the same pitch at Palermo? Especially as Mikkeli's going to be an important factor in their relegation battle in providing service and scoring goals for them.
Well, yeah, you'd think. And, you know, he's not the youngest anymore, but he's not the oldest either. I think he's 33 now. Mm. So it's not like he's in his kind of final days as a player. You know, you only have to look at, for instance, Francesco Totti. At 36, still doing the business. Not saying Mikkeli is of the same quality, but certainly with those few years on Totti, he can do it at a different level. I've not quite got why Gasperini has been so insistent, to be quite honest, all season, saying that the two can't play together. I've seen some fantastic flashes of Dybala. He's got a hat-trick earlier in the season in one of Palermo's few wins. Two goals against Sampdoria, I think it was. And, you know, there's been times just when he's been injected late into a game, the last 10 or 15 minutes, where he's shown something that they haven't had for the rest of the game, and you can't afford to keep turning your nose up at that or at the ability that Mikkeli has for long periods of games when you're really in need of points in the way that Palermo are. I think we've got some reasonably winnable games coming up, and it's going to be really important that Gasperini gets the makeup of his side right in the next few games. And I think that is going to have to mean playing Dybala and Mikkeli at times. And if you don't have somebody holding it up, playing with their back to goal, then it can lead to trouble at times. And you know, he's brought in the likes of Boudin to play up there. You know, he doesn't really want to sacrifice one of his two creative players in behind the striker. So that's been kind of part of his reasoning, I think. But as I say, you can't afford to not have Dybala and Mikkeli on the pitch when you've got big games coming up like they have, and they need to pick up points pretty quickly. And maybe he'll have a rethink as a result of what he saw on Saturday night.
Chris, it's cup action this midweek. We saw Juventus take on Lazio last night. Roma take on Inter tonight. Will Inter be looking to get a little bit of a revenge over Roma, because that draw against the side from the capital city really is costing them in terms of getting back involved in this Serie A title race?
Yeah, well, again, like in the first 20 minutes of the game, it looked as though Roma were just going to run away with it. And you know, looking at that Inter side and the way that they set up, and the fact that in those early moments they just had next to none of the ball, you really thought that Roma could inflict another 4-0 like last season on the Inter. But they scored at the right time. Guarin committed defenders well at the right kind of time, just as Roma were kind of dropping off. And again, for Inter, they could have snatched it. Livaja hit the post, the inside of the post at that. They had a couple of chances in the second half, but for the most part, after that opening, Inter would have been placed to probably take a point out of it. You know, it's going to be a real scramble now for the Champions League places, and Roma and Inter are both probably going to believe that they can have a real say in that. But at the same time, they've got to start catching the Fiorentinas and Napolis and Lazios and playing as consistently as they are, because, you know, they've got some quality in that side, and you'd think that clubs of the size of Roma and Inter would be able to eventually overhaul the other three, but they're just not doing it at the moment, and taking points off each other at the weekend didn't really help either of them.
You mentioned there they started slow against Roma. What's changed in this Inter side with its confidence? Because especially when we saw them play Juventus earlier in the season, they came out flying. Stramaccioni had this Inter side buzzing for the big games, and now it's falling a little bit flat-footed.
It is, but I think against Roma, who typically this season have had magnificent opening 30-minute spells, just time after time, they've pummeled teams almost into submission in the first 30 minutes, but then found it difficult to keep that up. And I think that the plan was probably for Inter to go in with a bit of containment in mind and then see what they could develop from there. And you know, they had Livaja and Palacio up front. They had Guarin just in behind, who's proven to be really creative in that kind of number 10 position, where he dropped off at times in midfield defensively this season, and it's really cost him to at times. And when he's playing, not shooting, he's certainly got the creativity and the ability with the ball at his feet to make things happen. So that certainly helped them out on Sunday, as I say, and they did have chances in that second half. And so to a point, the game plan went pretty much right, but obviously giving away the penalty was at a kind of crucial time, was a bit of a disappointment for them. But in terms of how the game plans went, I think it went more eventually in the longer run towards Inter's game plan than it did to Roma's, because Roma would have hoped that in taking that 1-0 lead, it would have really spurred them on to get a second and a third, whereas when they did get the first goal, they never really looked like getting a second.
Chris, we didn't see full-strength sides from Juventus or Lazio last night. I wonder if we'll see the same tonight. How important is the Coppa Italia when we look at all four of these teams in the semi-finals right now, are all battling out for those Champions League spots in Serie A at the moment?
It's not particularly important. It's a trend in Italy that, it's never been like, for instance, the FA Cup in England. The FA Cup in England until 2000 was almost the be-all and end-all. It was the last Saturday of the season, the middle of May, everyone sat by the TV at 3 o'clock. Now, you know, it's a bit of a joke tournament. It's along there with the League Cup in England. The Italian Cup has always been like that. The Coppa Italia, people really don't kind of pay too much attention to until they're in the final. It's a crazy situation, really. We've seen the likes of kind of Lazio won it in 2008 against Sampdoria when neither side were really up to much good in Serie A. The following year, obviously, Inter won it, but it was very much a case of as soon as they lifted that trophy, it was like, right, and the attention turns to the big two, which were Serie A and the Champions League. The year after, Palermo were in the final for the first time in nearly 40 years, and it was a massive day out for the Palermo fans, but, you know, everybody, like, nobody really paid that much attention in terms of Palermo being back in amongst the big boys just because of the cup final appearance. It would have been more important for them to get to fourth place. It's that kind of situation. Last year, obviously, Napoli beat Juve in the final. It was Del Piero's last game for Juventus, and it was almost that took over everything else. It was like, and by the way, it's a cup final after all the talk about Del Piero. So it's never been that huge a tournament. And as I say, when it gets to the semi-finals, people start to pay a little bit more attention to it. But again, Lazio shuffled their pack a little bit last night just to prove that, you know, that their minds are on this long and beaten run that they've got going, and what that can do for them in Serie A rather than getting to a final in May that not many people will pay too much attention to, especially now these days. It's always played the night after the Champions League. It's a bit like after the Lazio show.
Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today and getting into all things Italian football with you once again. We always appreciate the time you take out to join us here on WFD, and we look forward to getting you back on the line very soon indeed, mate.
My pleasure, mate.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chris Vokes from Goal.com joining us here on Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily to take us through the news from around Serie A. And, of course, Coppa Italia action was last night. Juventus taking on Lazio and blowing that 1-0 lead late on in the Delle Alpi. Stefano Mauri, after Juventus had dominated a lot of that game, giving Lazio a late equaliser in the 86th minute to put them kind of ahead on away goals. Second leg coming up very soon, of course, in Coppa Italia action. And we've got Inter against Roma tonight coming your way as well in Italian football in the other semi-final from the Coppa Italia. And those two met on the weekend, as we were saying with Chris, ended up in a 1-1 draw. There's plenty of transfer news coming out of Italian football as well. Mario Balotelli selling his house, or is leaving his rented house in Manchester. Does this mean that the move to AC Milan is on? £25 million is one of the figures that's been thrown around the intraweb over the last couple of days or so.
From what I heard, Mario Balotelli was just wanting to get closer to his brethren on the streets of Manchester and suffer with the homeboys in the hood. And what he's done is he's gone and put out beds of $100 bills for him and his hoodlums to sleep on.
Is that what you heard?
Yeah, and sheets of silk to sleep underneath.
I would, to be honest, it kind of wouldn't surprise me if that happened. It really wouldn't. But I kind of think it's unlikely. Just like, not because I don't believe you, Raf. Of course, I wholeheartedly believe you. But I'm just saying, I think it's more likely that maybe the house has been vacated because he's planning a move to somewhere else. Balotelli becoming frustrated at Manchester City, and AC Milan are the front runners in that long list of teams that would like to sign Mario Balotelli. Although I don't think it's that long, actually. Maybe there's only I could think of four that would probably want to sign him, and I think three of them would be Italian. There's also Didier Drogba's name as well still being thrown around the hat. What is he going to land in Serie A? Although a lot of people being disgusted by the amount of money that Didier Drogba is demanding for a season's worth of work, and actually had another tweet from our good friend Charlie Boker telling us how he was outraged and couldn't believe that Didier Drogba was demanding such high wages, and does he deserve that sort of money? He's no Lionel Messi, and he's got a hell of a legacy, you have to say, Charlie. He does have one hell of a legacy. I know you're kind of saying, you know, he wins the Champions League and suddenly he starts demanding all this, but in fairness, he won the Champions League. You can't argue with that. You can't say, you know, show us your medals, Didier. He's got them now. And was an exceptional player throughout his time at Chelsea and still led the line even when they brought in Fernando Torres. So Didier Drogba arguably could be worth all that money people are asking for. Miralem Janik, the Roma midfielder, a man who I was very impressed with, said a few days ago that I loved his performance and his goal in the Rome derby a couple of months back now. And rumours that Barcelona are interested in this. It would be very interesting indeed. Spurs have apparently are linked with him as well, although Spurs are linked with every single midfielder in Europe right now. Since signing Lewis Holtby, the list continues to go on. I'm sure Clint Dempsey's looking over his shoulder, not liking the sound of that. Janik to Barcelona. Don't quite see it myself personally, although apparently the Catalan giants are interested in him. And Inter Milan's Felipe Coutinho could be on his way to Liverpool as a bargain buy. Only made 10 appearances this season. One goal, only 20 years old though. Could Brendan Rodgers mould him into that kind of continental style of play that he's trying to get Liverpool to play this season? Be very interested indeed. Just back to last night's Coppa Italia action. Juventus, again, it was a mixed match side, so we can't read too much into it. But they've got to be gutted about losing a goal so late on after they pretty much dominated the first 70 minutes or so of that game. It's ridiculous. Okay, we saw what happened last night with Aston Villa, and we've spoken that already. But you've got to think, these sides, we mentioned Tottenham are a side that would be, I think it was said they'd be up in second and a point off Manchester United if games finished after 80 minutes. The number of goals they concede in the final 10. Teams have got to start getting focused. You really do have to just keep your focus in those final 10 minutes. I wonder how many sides, if we looked at, have let go winning goals in the final 10 minutes this season. Might be a long day of research for myself if I decide to take the plunge into that one. I'll do my best, Raf, to see what I can do. But in the final 10 minutes, the number of goals that have been scored in the final 10 minutes that have created either winning goals or equalising goals. It'd be interesting to have a look and see how many points in total have been robbed off teams from their lack of focus heading into the last few minutes of the game. A massive thank you there to Chris Vokes for joining us here on WFD. We're going to get our next guest lined up and ready for you. In the meantime, Raf, give us a nice, peaceful interlude to take us into our next guest right here on Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily.